Welcome to Fed Ninjas. This is 6. What in the world? We're going fast there, Eric.
Yes, we are. That's how we roll.
And in this particular one, we're talking about security, but also in relation to humans. What it really refers to are the systems, people, and processes or procedures, and then testing them, and then ensuring that we have the right people in the right roles. This is especially true, as we've seen in this COVID arena that we've recently been through, but also with the many threats that are out there, the magnitude of those threats. Eric, I know that this was heavy upon your mind.
This is something I've been thinking about over about the last year or so, because when I've been leading teams that have people on the teams that are specialized in their roles, and I know what they're doing and what they do is super important, and it all comes together and it protects that security or application or system. It protects it as a layer. You think of it as different layers. So there's different areas of discipline that are applicable to that. And then there's some overlaps. There's a lot of coordination with the different types of knowledge that people have, the skills they have, what they're doing as part of their responsibility. And why I've been thinking about this lately is because, yes, we did go through a pandemic. If anyone forgot about that, that thing that happened started about 4 years ago, hit in the U.S. in roughly mid-March of 2000. And everybody thought, oh, okay, hey, no big deal. We'll take a two-week break. We'll stay home. Everything will be good. It wasn't quite like that. Right. Best intentions that it would have been like that. Wasn't quite like that. It changed a lot of things. It changed how we operated things. And what I noticed was people were able to work at a home setting. People that normally work at an office setting were then sent with a laptop if they already didn't have one, if they had a workstation at their work, and said, okay, here you go. Go home and do your work. If they could, right? And most people in the offices could. So it changed a lot. I don't know if Maurice, did you see a lot of that too, where the setting you were in?
So in my saying, yes, the different clients that we had in the company I was working at the time, everyone was remote. There were so many different issues that they were facing, updates, if there was any software updates, or if there are any systems updates internally. And then on top of that, if they could even get online at times, and then what were some of those other things that started to percolate? And also now in the side of retail, which this particular thing was, it was a lot of e-commerce stuff. It was also an opportunity for the people that didn't have the best intents or legal underpinnings. They were taking advantage of that situation too. We saw an influx of counterfeits. Right. We saw an influx of unauthorized sellers and those type of things. And this, again, this is just from an e-commerce perspective. It's almost as if they were taking advantage of that opportunity to make a profit at the expense of whatever it might be. I assume that's some of the things that we started to see also in the cybersecurity space.
It is. And I'm glad you mentioned those examples. So thank you for that, because we're going to talk about that. So really what happened during that time is I had been working remotely for quite a while. And when you first start doing that, I was doing this, I think, full time in 2010, because I started working with remote teams. And I was working at a very large computer company. We all worked remote. And at first it was kind of weird. The reason it seemed kind of weird is because I was a pretty social person at the office, where I would talk to people. I would see them. I would say, hey, how are you doing? And just talk to them in the hall. And so that's the part that I missed. When I was at home, I felt isolated. So kind of empathetically thinking about when I started doing that, now all of these other people, when they got into that situation all at once during this pandemic time, they felt the same thing, but also they felt that way that they were disconnected from other people that could help them, like their IT staff. If they had a problem, they could go and say, hey, there's this update on my computer. It's not working right. Now something is wrong. They could walk down the hall and talk to their IT staff, or, wow, there's this weird thing on my laptop and it might be a security problem. I need somebody to help. Right. If these people are working from home, they don't have those people right there where they can walk down the hall. And so it made those people feel isolated also. And if you think about it, those people are working as an extension of their company work. So meaning they're going to use the services that they are authorized to use with their login password if they're using cloud services or a VPN or something like that. And they're doing this from home. So rather from than doing it from their corporate office network where there's a firewall and protection, you're dependent on their own home networking equipment and their access points with their wireless and their wireless passwords and their encryption key type that is built into their wireless system. So to protect from other people that can use software to be able to hear and understand what they're doing by listening to that with software on their wireless. So a lot of the IT staff were worried, rightfully so. And so they wanted to make sure that there was proper endpoint management and security of these systems. And so that's what you were seeing was IT being able to give out these laptops and assign them to people that were security hardened and then watch them closely and also send out training so that they were vigilant to attacks like phishing, things like that, where people could take advantage of them working in an isolated environment. So really understanding that part of it from that perspective of the end user, like an end business user, that was interesting during pandemic. But also things changed on the security side because what I saw is I was used to going through audit certifications for the systems. We're talking about the server systems that run the applications for the company. And I was used to going out and doing on-site visual inspections of the data centers. So we're talking co-location data centers in various places in the United States. There were some in other countries. And I was used to going to these and visiting them as a part of the audit, which the auditors would ensure that I would look at that. I would do a risk review if I found things that I didn't think were working properly. I would notate them. I would put in a service ticket to have them fixed. I would show the service ticket that it was fixed, and that would be part of the audit. Now, what I found was, of course, we were in pandemic, and so people didn't do that. They weren't allowed to do that. Nobody met in person. That's this thing that happened a while back that people kind of, it's fuzzy in their mind. They're like, oh yeah, we used to do that, and then we didn't do it. So you could do whatever you could do remotely. You could use telemetry and software, of course, to still ensure your systems are working properly. You could maybe dispatch a certified engineer to fix something that's broke, but you were very limited in the way that you were traditionally taking care of these systems. Now, if you combine that with ways that a lot of security procedures, policies, the way that your team works, and that you were used to doing these things during pre-pandemic, and also when you're testing these procedures, and sometimes testing can include having a real incident, and then you learn from these incidents. So you have an incident, you document it, you work on the incident, you remediate it, you have an after action review. Then you have a meeting later with lessons learned, and you bring that back into your training and into your documentation. So you get better over time. So what I found is during this time period, a lot of those things weren't happening. It was just ensuring the stability of everything that was operating was working properly. If we come to the point in time where we're at now, it's like, okay, how do we get back to that? And also, do we have the right roles in place, the right humans in place? Because us humans actually are still pretty important. We realize there's things like automation, artificial intelligence that can do a lot of things really quickly, that can do, like, when we first saw cert in whatever system you were using and you were able to search the web, find things. Now you can be able to do that with artificial intelligence, but it can make its own assumptions based on the context and the prompts you send it. And it can give you some really good ideas, really good automation, and you can build on that automation. You can script it, you can use APIs, you can do different things, and it's great. But I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding that the humans are still super important. And we've talked about that in some of the previous discussions that we've had, where there's possibly some humans that are not being used to their full potential and evaluated as this process or as this giant system that includes people, processes, and systems. And so I think my thoughts of looking at this in observation is we need to do a close risk assessment based on a business level assessment to make sure that we have those right people in places, especially in critical infrastructure. And we're talking things like supply chain, we're talking things like banking, like energy, food supply. Because if we look at it and we think, oh, wow, things are running great, I can just call Amazon or something else and something will be delivered at my door. DoorDash, I'm hungry. I'm going to order some, whatever it is, and it'll show up. Well, let's assume, all right, well, that might not work because some cybersecurity event happened in the supply chain of being able to provide that. And that's just a small example. That's just a small inconvenience. Now put it to something that's more critical, and then we start having problems, but we might have cascading problems where there's reliance on core pieces that caused even more damage on down the line. So here's the reason also that I'm thinking about this. We have a lot of CISO webinars, and I joined these, and I started joining them because I have certifications. And I thought, wow, this would be a cool way to get my continuing education credits. Also, I thought it was interesting because you learn from the other CISO type people because you hear some of their experience that they're able to share limited general information, but you're able to get some knowledge about that, and it helps you in your decision-making processes when you're working. One of the questions that was really cool, all right, what do you feel is the biggest problem that we're having right now? And before, like a year ago, it might have been, all right, it's cloud systems or it's authentication or it's encryption on systems. One of the topics this year was humans. And I happened to join this web conference a little bit late. And so I didn't get to see everybody else's response. And then I responded when I was introducing myself. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know it's humans because, as I kind of explained, I don't feel we're using humans optimally in this entire process when it comes to security and risk management. Look at it this way. Number one, it could be, and oftentimes is, the technical security practitioner not explaining in a business type of contextual conversation with other business leaders of why things are important or why they think they are important, but also the damage that they see that can be done, and then getting their feedback and saying, hey, look, I'm seeing this thing. What could that really do in our business? Is it reputation damage? Is it going to cost us? Are our partners or customers going to, well, either maybe violate a contract with them and we get fined or something like that? Or are they not going to renew with us, or prospects going to be angry with it or not happy with us and not even join in the first place? I think that that's the problem. So I answered humans, of course, and I kind of explained it. I am really thinking that this has become one of the strongest points in the equation when you talk security and general technology risk. When you're dissecting out that triangle that is technology, processes, and humans, I think we really need to upgrade the humans part of that triangle.
My question from an HR perspective, right? How do we make sure that the right people are there? So if you look at the HR process, it's always you get the interviews, you get multiple interviews, you go through behavioral interview and they go through whatever of crazy interview tactics there are. And I ask this because there have been multiple times that the wrong people are in the wrong jobs, either because they're not capable or it's just not a fit, the culture or what, maybe it's something that hasn't even been defined yet. What are some of the things that you would believe would ensure that the right people are in those particular positions?
Got some good examples for you.
Awesome.
So I would say, obviously, when you're the hiring manager and then you've got your hiring manager, you got other personnel, and they evaluate different criteria and they have a list that they come in there and they want to make sure that they cover the list. And then they also want to hear what the candidate has to say and why they want the job in the first place. Also, listen to their questions and think about what questions they might get in advance and then be able to prepare and give them an answer, but then they might ask you some different questions. So being able to pivot and give a decent answer on that as well, or maybe come back to them. You want to make sure that they, number one, have some previous experience that's relevant to the job posting that you have out for them to be able to do the initial job, right? And also explain how they could add value to your job requisition that you have posted through that as the basics. That's the basics. But then you want to see that they're curious. You want a person who's curious and who can solve problems, because you're going to have things that fit in the box. But especially with security, you're going to have all sorts of things that come at you that aren't even in the box. they're all over the place. So you want to see a person who's curious, who's able to adapt to different situations. In relation to what we're talking about, you also want a person who can identify with a business and market that you're trying to protect. And here's the reason. I'm going to take a step in a different direction, and I'm going to talk about going to security conferences. When you go there, you're going to hear a lot of people talk about some amazing things where they hacked into some crazy thing and showed this new security vulnerability or whatever it is. And it's very interesting on a technical level. But security people, a lot of times, will get sucked into that. I'm not saying everybody does this. It's easy for myself to get sucked into that and just follow down that super technical path and not associate it with impact and risk to the business. When I'm interviewing people, I want to make sure they understand the business and understand what parts could hurt the business, what parts we're trying to protect. And that includes intellectual property, customer data, third-party data, partner data, and all of these other areas. If you are a person working on a security team, if you don't understand a lot about the business, just ask questions, because people will be glad to tell you. People from your leaders from your own security organization, because they understand the business goals, and they'll be telling you the why you should be doing this. And so I think that's really important, especially for younger security people. I know this would have been good information for me like 25 years ago to say, okay, I'm running all of these security hardening scripts that go out to the systems. Well, technically, I know why we're supposed to do that. But if I had some more business context, that would probably help me see the overall picture of how it really impacts the customers and the people that are using the systems.
It really goes in line to what Dylan, the college student, was starting to poke around at. In our last interview, he had some really great questions as far as what he could do to prepare as a student. That vetting has to go not only from the students, but from every level that we're looking at.
Absolutely. I was thinking the same thing too, is a big part of this is training. And in the colleges, we're seeing some really great programs and great degree programs with cybersecurity. And some of these are using the newest technology. Some of the things I like seeing is developing on cloud systems and the security parts to that, understanding software development, different things like scanning code for security defects in code, understanding that whole process of different software engineers that are building their part of the code, like a continuous integration, continuous development process, where they're working like an agile environment where they've got this backlog of things and each person is working on it and they're working like a 2-week sprint or something like that. And then they compile everything every night and they build it and they test it and they deploy it very often. And so if you can see that and visualize that, I was lucky enough to see this early on in a large computer company within the last 10 years ago, when this really started hitting into cloud environments. If you're able to see that and see it in action and then understand the security around all of that, it really helps you. Yeah. Because then you're looking at it from that application view. Then also going back to the business part of it, you're understanding the context of what you've got to protect, and you're taking that technical knowledge. You're able to put it into a bigger picture business risk equation. Just one last point to kind of think about is, again, there's this equation of getting better all the time. Mm-hmm. And that includes understanding how to meet a business risk with technology and security controls, then implementing it in tests, documenting it, training the people, ensuring they know how to operate that security control, measuring it to make sure it's effective. And so this is really where the humans come in, and making sure you're covering all of the things for the different type of risk. So you've got multiple domains of security controls. And so you're managing all of these to make sure you've got the right ones in place. And again, that's why the humans are important, because you need to make sure that they understand what they're doing and doing it effectively.